Welcome back to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. This is your host, Amos Medford. Thanks so much for joining us today, and I'm excited today to have Mr. Pete Muller on from the National Wild Turkey Federation. So, huge thank you to Pete for joining me today and just talking turkey hunting and a little bit of cooking and preparation for wild turkey and stuff like that. So it's a fun one. I think y'all are going to enjoy this one. Really appreciate everyone continuing to tune in, and our first episode of the turkey series with Toby Smith has done extremely well. It's just been fun for everyone to listen to that one, so appreciate all the support, all the listens, and subscriptions and everything. So we really do appreciate those of you who subscribe and leave a review and all that good stuff. It definitely helps. We appreciate it, but we hope y'all enjoyed this one with Pete Muller of the NWTF. The Wannabe Hunting Podcast Turkey Series is brought to you by the Wannabe Hunting Podcast merch store on Store Frontier. You can go to storefrontier.com/wannabehunting and pick up an Established by God Genesis 9-3 shirt, or our One Track Mind with the turkey tracks, the newest designs on the site. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for supporting. I do want to make a quick note that Pete and I had some technical difficulties, and big thanks to Pete for hanging in there with me. So there's a little bit of editing, cutting in and out that I had to do, but it came out okay. But if you hear us kind of stop abruptly or jump in, midway, that's why. So thanks to Pete for hanging in there. Those of you who do podcasts, you know the deal on that. But no, it came out pretty good. So just a quick heads up. Thank y'all.
NWTF Convention and Sports Show coming up February 16th to the 19th. And that's kind of the turning point for even a lot of people in the industry, where they go from finishing up fall, in those late seasons. And really it's the flip of the switch to start thinking about turkey. Because I'm honestly, from the close of our convention and the end of that weekend, you're essentially 2 weeks away from the start of the first turkey season, as things open up in lower parts of Florida. So it's an exciting time. I'm excited to actually get back with the entire family flock down up in Nashville, Tennessee. It's been a long time since we've had that event, but we've got a lot of cool stuff going on there. Spring Goblin is just right around the corner.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. And it's like to say that South Florida season starts pretty quick. So I haven't actually hunted the South Zone yet. I'm in North Florida, but someday I'm sure I'll cross the line and get an early start.
Yeah, I think that's if you're trying to make the most out of your seasons or turkey season in general, if you can manage to eke out a hunt on that front end as early as that early part of March, and then you can stretch it all the way until that last season closes. I think it's like the first week of June. You end up actually getting a fair amount of turkey hunting in there, and that's like the most that you will ever have. It's definitely an exciting time. I've never hunted that lower part too. I've hunted the north zone of Florida a couple times.
Right.
But one day I'll get down there to that south part and chase those early season, darker, more black winged Osceolas.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That'd be awesome, man. Well, I want to ask you a few things just about, cooking wild turkey and other wild game, and kind of pick your brain a little bit on turkey hunting, and maybe get the backstory of how you got into hunting and stuff like that. But before we jump into all that, is there anything else you want to add? The upcoming convention, I know you said you got some pretty cool stuff planned. Anything you'd kind of like to get out as far as what's going on with the convention?
Sure. So the biggest thing is, obviously, it's great if people can make it to the event there in Nashville. If you can't, we'll still be trying to provide a lot of updates as to things that are going on while we're on location in Nashville. So stay tuned on any of the social channels. You'll see a lot of content popping up in those places. We will be broadcasting the calling competition. Every single one of the calling competitions that have there will be streamed live on Facebook and be available YouTube after convention has closed. But other things to keep in mind is that there's seminars that we'll be reporting on. If you're there, definitely get a chance to sit in on Thursday morning's rendezvous, where there will be a talk about current wild turkey research going on. Also a presentation from Dr. Mike Chamberlain on the state of the wild turkey, just talking about the entire population of wild turkey across the entire U.S. And I think that that's something that's of interest to a lot of turkey hunters right now, as people are watching, you know, fluctuations up and down in some areas. But then the other thing is just we'll be trying to share out as much content of conservation work that's going on in the NWTF, new items to look for before your spring hunts come up. So any new interesting products that we find on the floor, we'll try to tease out some of those things. And if you're there, it's just a good time to interact with fellow like-minded turkey junkies like ourselves. If you're ever wanting to go to a place where you won't ever get fussed at for, you know, yelping away on a diaphragm call nonstop, turkey convention is that place. Yeah, anywhere else in the world that you go, if you sit there for three straight days and just, you know, have turkey noises going on, somebody's eventually going to get upset. But no, they're in Nashville. It's a welcome sound.
Yeah, very few places you can get away with that for longer than a few minutes. That's awesome. I was actually on your hunting podcast a while back. And even those guys, they said, if you ever get to go to one show, you know, make it the NWTF convention. So someday I'm going to make it up there. It's not going to be this year, but I'm definitely looking to come to the convention one of these years.
Well, next year could be a really fun one to go to as well. Next year is the organization's 50th anniversary. So 50 years is a pretty strong history for any group or any anniversary, but knowing that there's been 50 years of dedication to preservation of a way of life, and then also the conservation of our cherished bird, the wild turkey, that's pretty rich heritage, and it wouldn't be possible without the dedicated members and volunteers that are out there in the field carrying out the events, teaching, you know, new individuals to hunt turkeys, raising funding for conservation work. So it's a pretty special monumental event for next year. So if you get a chance to go to that one, I would say definitely make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Now this may be a little tough for a yes or no answer. You know, surely the wild turkey population is in a better spot than it was 50 years ago when the NWTF started. But would you say in general the turkey population is pretty healthy right now, or it's trending up or down? Is there an overall?
So from the time that the organization started back in 73, there were, let's say, around, you know, 1.25 to 1.3 million turkeys across the country, thanks to the efforts of the NWTF, state agencies, you know, and even just the turkey hunters that were willing to have birds from their own backyard be put in boxes and shipped to other places to help this population explode across the entire country. Things hit a high of around 7 million. I think current population estimates are sitting at around, I think it's last numbers that I was given was around 6.25. But if you look at that, there has been a decline of the overall population. If you just look at the American wild turkey and all the places that they are, there has been a decline. And that's something that we're going to spend a little bit more time talking about this year at convention. I don't think that there's one singular answer as to how to fix things, but the things that we do know is obviously there's less habitat for the birds, less interconnected, good, suitable habitat for nesting and brooding, which again, you need for healthy reproduction. Then there's also just a lesser population of people that are actually turkey hunting. I know that there's somewhat of an idea that there's more turkey hunters now than there have ever been. But that number has actually gone down, I want to say, in the past 10 years from as many as 3 million to where I think the last number that I saw was it was just a touch over 2. So the people that are participating in it are down. The birds are down. And so the interest in even from the people that are probably my age and younger of thinking, hey, there's something really wrong with the bird. You know, it's there's they've either seen turkeys their entire life and never really had the lows. Or if they're the old timers, they've seen things explode from where you didn't really hear any birds to where there were birds everywhere. And now they've settled back to somewhere in the middle. Now, again, there's a lot of things that can be done, research, but the number one thing that can be done to help the birds overall is to make sure that there's suitable habitat. And those are things that we're going to continue to work on. But I think that there's obviously research that's going on that we're a part of that needs to be shared out at a higher rate to where people can see some of those activities, whether it be monitoring birds, goblin chronology studies that are going on, trap and release of birds that are going on just for different things. So I think that you'll see a lot more of that at this convention, just because there is a more heightened awareness of the overall population now. But I would say there are certain places where birds are healthier than ever. And then there are certain places where there's work that has to be done collaboratively to figure out what more can we do to fix localized declines.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, there's a couple places I hunt in the area that are, you know, we see a lot of turkeys, you know, at least it seems like a lot to me. You know, we're out deer hunting or even we're turkey hunting, you know, we can generally see some, but, you know, also in the North Florida area, the Jacksonville area, I mean, there's a new neighborhood every other day. And when they take out, you know, these sections of woods, it's not helping the population of, you know, turkeys and deer or anything else, you know?
Yeah, it can definitely make it more difficult. But I think that, you know, some stuff that we've seen, and I think it's probably more anecdotal evidence than anything, but even just the behaviors of the birds themselves have evolved. And you hear this from talking to some of the old timers where they talk about, hey, you know, it used to go out and be able to strike up any call and you'd hear gobbles all over the place. And now it's, you know, more birds are tight beaked or whatever it is. So I think they've been able to see some things in studies from guys like Brett Collier and Chamberlain through the radio monitoring of birds and actually also even monitoring hunters in the field. And they see that from the time that the birds, you know, start having hunters in the field, even the gobbles go down. So I think there's a lot more that we can always learn, but yeah, there's the work of the NWTF and the work that we can do to help supplement turkey populations, to help keep things healthy for generations to come, where turkey hunters like you and I get to keep heading into the field and having good experiences. I think that work will never be done.
Yeah, there's always going to be something, you know, to challenge us. You know, they're not going to stop making neighborhoods, you know, so there's always going to be things involved and ways to work around it or to, you know, come up with solutions, which is kind of the whole point of the NWTF. So that's pretty awesome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In the next few weeks, you will see some new campaigns come out, some new language. It's going to be a heightened atmosphere where we're talking just as much about the conservation work that's going on, but also how people can really become involved. And I'd say that we've been somewhat of a product of the success of all the work going on in the field, the members, the volunteers, to where, again, you know, if you're of a certain age, there's always been turkeys to go hunt. And it's tough when you're an organization that says you're working for an animal and they seem to be plentiful to have people realize what still needs to happen and how their member dollars can still be used effectively to carry out conservation work. So I'd say if you're a turkey hunter and you want to keep that resource around or you're eager to chase birds for years and years to come, $35 is a small thing to put in a pot. Consider we spend, you know, at least that much on a box of shells every year. So,
yeah, to me, that's like the least you can do is just join the NWTF. I mean, you know, absolutely. Like you said, $35, and you're a member and you've contributed, you know, that should be the starting point, you know, especially if you call yourself a turkey hunter.
I think that it's the least that you can do. There's always ways that you can do more. You can get involved, but you know, at least putting some money towards conservation that then we can use to leverage it at a rate of, let's say, 10 to 1, or even as high as 20 to 1 in some areas. That really helps make a dent in work that needs to be done. So,
yeah, absolutely. Cool. I appreciate kind of that was probably the short, extra simplified version of, you know, kind of where things are and all that, but I appreciate you going over that with me. You know, I did want to ask you, kind of moving along, you know, how you got into hunting or turkey hunting specifically, either or both, you know, what's your story there?
You know, I always grew up in a family that did outdoor things. I grew up camping and fishing. I remember going squirrel hunting with my dad growing up, and you know, I grew up in Delaware, so not really a state that's known for bustling populations of turkeys, or at least not that time. I don't remember actually even knowing anybody that turkey hunted until I was in college in North Carolina. And even at that point, it was kind of thought of as, you know, this is one of the tougher types of hunting that you can do. But I ended up, after college, moving out west to Wyoming, and I lived out there for a number of years. And that was the first time I ever really got a taste of wild turkey hunting. And so I honestly was spoiled, because anybody that's ever gone and hunted the Black Hills or hunted Merriam's in general know that they are not anything close to what you get when you're hunting, you know, like the southern swamps and pines. And the easterns here are far harder birds. I think if you can learn to hunt in certain areas of the country, like the southeast, you could probably kill birds anywhere. But I got my start in Wyoming, and it was all because I read the spring turkey guide one year, and it talked about just a high population or a high percentage of the people that hunted turkeys in the Black Hills.
You were saying you moved out west and it kind of spoiled you.
Yeah. So I ended up getting a chance to hunt the Black Hills, Wyoming for my very first turkey hunt. And you know, anybody that's ever hunted Merriam's, they're a totally different bird, no pun intended, but they're more gobble friendly. They're an easier bird to learn on, I would say. So I remember, you know, after reading the spring turkey guide, it said a high percentage of people that hunted the Black Hills got birds. And I thought, well, heck, I mean, I'm out here hunting everything else that the West has to offer. I might as well try my hand at this. And I went and bought a single-sided Primos box call and a 2D Montana decoy hen. And I ventured up, you know, drove from the little town that I was living in, drove up to the Black Hills and hunted public land and managed to kill a bird. And that was kind of the beginning of it, to where then it was, I knew every spring I was going to go hunt that area. And even when I started there was actually a two bird region. But we only ever bought the over the counter tags for it. But that was kind of where things started. And then I got a chance to hunt some in Colorado when I lived there and got employed with the National Wild Turkey Federation and have gotten to chase birds in a couple different locations and then also help pass on my love of chasing turkeys to other people. And so I think that's been a fun part of the journey, where not only did I get hooked on it before I even started here, but it was now I'm working to help other people get that same bug that I got hooked on.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I've heard the same thing as far as, you know, kind of them acting a lot different out that way. But that's pretty cool. So you grew up, you know, not hunting very little, but then kind of jumped into it a little bit later.
Yeah, it was definitely the hunting that we did wasn't the hunting that I do now. I mean, honestly, if there's a season for it now, I'm probably chasing it. Although I haven't done nearly as much waterfowl in recent years. But it's something where, you know, we chase squirrels. My dad did some deer hunting, you know, went and shot the occasional pheasant or quail at a game farm. But again, Delaware is not the sportsman's paradise like Wyoming was by a long shot. Now, obviously nowadays there's huntable populations of turkeys in 49 states, you know, that's your lower 48 plus Hawaii. But it hasn't always been that way. So I just kind of wrap everything up. You know, it was, as far as like my hunting, it's yeah. something that it was always there as far as just the outdoor lifestyle. But man, you hit certain parts of the country that are just deeply embedded with the hunting aspect, and there's far more opportunity, and that changes the type of stuff that you do. And it's something that now that I'm a parent and I've got kids of my own, I'm trying to make sure that they at least get the experience of going along on hunts. And if they want to try it out and they're exposed to firearms at a young age and safety and everything like that, right. I'm trying to continue that heritage that I was somewhat raised with, maybe not as much in the big game or turkey aspect, but continuing that on with them to where they understand the value of that outdoor lifestyle.
Yeah, awesome. And I like that. And to me, you know, I grew up, you know, we grew up, you know, shooting guns and kind of same thing, you know, maybe going after some squirrels and in the backyard or whatever, but you know, it just wasn't hunting. And you know, it's interesting to see how some people get into it later in life. And you know, you go from not being a big time hunter to, you know, working for a conservation hunting type organization. You know, it's just pretty neat to me how things can go. You know, you can go from not being in it to really being in it. Really? Which in some ways is how I feel that I am, you know, from, you know, starting hunting, you know, 5-6 years ago to, you know, having a podcast about it. So, that's kind of interesting to me how your progression, you know, went.
Yeah, I think, and that's what a unique thing about the outdoors and the hunting industry as a whole, or even just that pursuit, the passion, is that no two stories are alike. I mean, yeah, there's a fair amount of people that are raised in it, and maybe they killed their first deer when they were 6 or 7 years old. You know, but there's a lot of people that, you know, maybe they started young and they took some time off in college because time was tougher, or they started a family and there was a little bit of time away and they didn't take the time to still pursue their passion, and now they're getting back into it full bore. So it's no two stories are really alike, but it's neat to hear everybody's story about, you know, what's charged them, you know, when it comes to the outdoors and how they pursue that passion, how it's become a part of their lives. For me, a big thing more recently has been diving into wild game preparation and things like that. And that was something where I always enjoyed cooking. But for me, I remember the very first turkey that I killed, it was a painstaking process, but I plucked that entire bird, cleaned it, did everything that I was supposed to do. Except for one step, I injected the thing, deep fried it. And then as I went to cut into it, and, you know, we had buddies hanging around, everybody had been waiting for this feast that we were going to have, and slicing into it through that crisp skin, I hit the craw and I had forgotten to take that out. Cause I'd never killed a turkey before. I didn't know. And it kind of ruined the entire meal. Everybody else was like, "Hey, I'm going to get pizza." I was like, "Well, I got to figure out what to do with this bird here." And I ended up cleaning everything up and, you know, took usable portions of the meat and still ended up using that. But it was, I've in recent years spent a lot of time trying to find ways to share game with people, because you always hear it when, you know, somebody's like, "Oh, I don't like this meat," or "I don't like that meat. It's too gamey," or "It's, you know, I don't know what to do with it." And I think that there's a lot of ways that people can learn to prepare their deer meat, their turkey, duck, whatever it might be, in ways that resonate with tastes, flavors that they're used to, or they don't realize the versatility of the meat that can be substituted into things that they're already eating on a regular basis. And so that's kind of how my journey has now taken a different turn of trying to educate people on different ways to use game. And especially when it comes to turkey hunting, the biggest thing that I try to inform people on is keep the legs and thighs. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that their choice cut off of a wild turkey is the breast meat, whether they're making nuggets or poppers or smoked turkey breasts or something like that. And don't get me wrong, it is fantastic, but there's so much that you can do with a turkey in general that just makes it, you know, table fare, you know, stretches it out through that many more meals when you're using all parts of it.
Yeah. That's cool. And do you want to maybe go a little bit further on turkey legs and thighs, whether it's, you know, getting them off
So I think the biggest thing that people run into most of the time, and you hear it when you talk to turkey hunters, is they just say the meat's too tough. And the biggest thing to keep in mind with any wild game is that while you can substitute it in for your store-bought meats, you know, whether it be red meat or poultry and things like that, you can substitute it, but you have to treat it differently and you have to watch your temperatures a lot more. If you end up overcooking things, you can end up getting your meat that ends up being dried out, and then it does get too tough. But your turkey legs, they're a very simple process to get off of the bird. I mean, you're just cutting right down at the ball joint on that leg where it joins to the hip. Similar you would if you were breaking down a chicken. You know, you can pluck them, you can leave the skin on that ends up working well to try to help keep some of that moisture in there, or you can completely take that off. I do my turkey legs a number of different ways. One of the ways I actually did recently was I ended up sous vide-ing the legs for quite some time, and then I ended up finishing them on goodness gracious, I can't remember exactly how I finished them, but I ended up basically replicating state fair turkey legs. And it was a lengthy process because for that darker meat, you have to cook it lower and slower for longer periods of time to try to break down those fibers. Because if you think about it, a turkey's not like your farm bird. I mean, he's out there running around in the wild. His legs are, you know, one of his biggest, you know, defense mechanisms. And it's that, you know, flight. I mean, if you've ever seen a turkey run, they scoot at speeds of like 25 miles an hour. So those legs are working hard. So if you cook them very low and slow, you can end up breaking them down. If you include braising liquids as well, you know, you can use chicken stock, things like that. It eventually gets to the point where the meat just falls off the bone and is tender. It can be pulled apart, used in tacos, burritos. It can be made into, you know, pulled turkey sandwiches with some coleslaw or something like that. But the other thing that you can actually do is you can cut every last chunk of that darker meat off of the legs, and then you can grind it. And then you can start using it just like you would, you know, any other ground turkey. You can make burgers with it. I've done that for my kids. You can use it in your spaghettis. You can use it, you know. So the versatility of those isn't just, hey, throw this on, you know, cut the chunks of meat off and then you know, bread it, fry it, and do that. I mean, again, there's a lot of things that you can do. Now, even the thighs, as long as you bread those and fry those, you can make a pretty darn good, you know, a pretty darn good sandwich with just that cut. But again, you got to watch your temperatures and make sure that you're not over drying things. But at a temp of about, you know, 165 to 167, you know, you're actually coming out to where your meat's done. You don't have to worry about any parasites. Everything's cooked off at that point, and right, you're good to go.
Okay. Yeah, that's very cool. What about like if I was going to make tacos with, you know, turkey, would you recommend, you know, thighs and legs versus breast or either or both?
You know, honestly, for doing stuff like tacos, you can slow cook the turkey breast as well. And we actually, here at the NWTF, every year we host a recipe contest, and there was a gal, I want to say she was from either California or New Mexico, but she submitted a wild turkey carnitas recipe, and I recreated it just so we could test flavors and everything like that. And it was done I want to say it was either done in a pressure cooker or a crock pot. I can't remember right offhand, but it at the end, the meat was very, very easy to shred, and that worked out well. But if you're also just looking to do, you know, ground meat with taco seasoning on, you know, on a soft or crunchy taco, take those legs and run them through a grinder, or even just slice it up about as thin as you can. And you can quick stir fry those in a pan, and it'll come out pretty good. But again, you really would want to make sure that you don't overcook it. Me personally, I like the flavor from the legs a whole lot better than I do the turkey breast. So.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Yeah. I appreciate that, you know, that info. Like I said, I haven't cooked very much, you know, very much wild turkey. I've only killed one, and I think we did the breast in a you know, in a crock pot. And it turned out pretty good, but I probably overcooked them a little bit. And, you know, so hadn't got to experiment too much. So that's cool.
Hey, man, you made it farther than a lot of people had. And that was harvesting the bird. That's always the first hard step. There's a lot of people out there that are turkey hunters that don't even get that chance every year. So it's just like anything else. That's cool, man. Congrats on your bird.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it was 3 years ago now. And the next year I just about didn't see anything. And then last year I saw plenty, but they just weren't close enough. So and I couldn't get them to come in. But yeah, it's a challenge just getting the bird. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Speaking of cooking and food, you put something up. I think it was last night. Was that? Did you say it was alligator?
Yes, that was alligator.
That looked amazing.
Here in South Carolina, I've gotten the chance to – we have a draw system here for alligators, and I've gotten a chance to hunt them twice now. This year I was able to take one that was just a touch under 10 foot. And so used up one of the first packages of meat that I got off that gator this year, and it was fried turkey or fried gator nuggets from one of the tail loins. And then it was with a spicy Cajun mayo and some cheese grits and some Cajun seasoned corn and then some sauteed green beans. My kids ate most of it. They ate more nuggets than anything. But yeah, it was pretty tasty.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, if we're being honest, you can bread and fry most things and they turn out pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you bread and fry it. There's only so many things that can. That's cool, though. Well, that's awesome, man. I appreciate you sharing a little bit on, you know, kind of the cooking process and you know, what you've done with some of that. But, you know, kind of wrapping everything up and bringing it together. You know, one, what are your plans for this turkey season? Are you staying in South Carolina or do you have some other states make it to this year?
So typically through work, I'll end up hosting some hunts. I don't do much hunting myself anymore during turkey season. I try to get out a few days here in South Carolina. It's actually kind of funny. I've actually never killed a South Carolina turkey because I'm either at home with kids or doing some traveling. But there are a few trips, and if I get the chance to, just because every so often I like to do it, I may make a trip back out to Wyoming, just where I got my start. It's just kind of more of a sentimental thing that you get to enjoy that the awesome scenery out there in the Black Hills. I mean, heck, you've got Devil's Tower nearby, you've got Mount Rushmore nearby, and it's a neat place to go. So every now and again, I go back out that way and chase birds. But outside of that, no, it's going to be a pretty easy spring. I think one of my goals this year is to, if I can make a trip down to Florida, is I'd like to try to go wrap up my archery grand slam. Again, I don't know if I'll get a chance to do that, but the only bird that I have left to do with a bow is an Osceola. So at some point I should probably start planning that.
All right. See if we can close her out.
I don't know if it got it, but I was just saying at some point, you know, either this year I'll see if I can't make a swing down to Florida or next year, but that's the only place I have left to go to wrap an archery grand slam for birds. But outside of that, I think I might try to hit some public land here in South Carolina and finally scratch out that first South Carolina bird if I get some time.
Cool, man. That sounds like a good plan. Real quick, and I'll let you go. Do you have any, what kind of calls do you use? Usually diaphragm, or do you like to use like a slate or a box or anything like that?
I typically use a mouth call. I'd say I use that for a majority of things. But I'll carry a box call. It's a zinc box call. Mm-hmm. And then I have a couple pot calls that I carry. One of them is a copper pot, just because I think it provides a little bit of a different sound than what birds are probably hearing off of most people just running slates. And then I also carry just a regular slate call, just because, you know, it's one that just runs really, really easily. But the copper pot is one that just, it seems to have a different pitch to it, and it can cut the wind a little bit better. But anytime that I spark up a bird, anything from then on out will pretty much happen on a diaphragm call. And I will say I'm not good at all at calling. Like, the difference between me and even the kids that are calling in our calling competition is they are probably 10 times the caller that I am, but I'm able to scratch out a bird here and there. So that leaves me feeling okay.
Yes, sir. I can imagine. Well, that's cool, man. Well, Pete, I appreciate you joining me today. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely, man. I definitely appreciate you having me on. I'd say anybody interested in trying to learn more about turkey hunting, head over to nwtf.org. We have a great learning tool on the website. It's our Turkey Hunting 101 that you can give a look at, or even just browse through some of the articles online that you have. And there's also a portal where you can log on, become a member, and start doing your part to help out with turkey conservation.
Absolutely. Cool. I'll definitely check out the website as well. I've been there before, but I'll take a look at that course for sure.
Absolutely, man. Well, thank you again for having me on. Have a great day.
All right. You too, buddy.
Hey, y'all. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. I hope you're enjoying the turkey series so far, and I hope you enjoyed our guest today, Mr. Pete Muller of the NWTF. I enjoyed talking with Pete. He's a great guy and had a lot of knowledge to share with us. So stay tuned for more on the turkey series, and stay tuned to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate your support. Hope everybody has an awesome turkey season this spring, and hope you're getting your shotgun sighted in, keeping your bow tuned up, doing whatever you need to do there. But we're all looking forward to turkey season, so let's stay locked in. Thanks for listening, everybody. As always, honor God, work hard, and keep hunting.